Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the McCarthy Project live from Minnesota, where we have been attacking life and sports since 2001. Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
This is Coach Braden Holloway with NC State Swimming and Diving.
Yes, this is Stephen McCarthy from...
Stephen, how are you doing?
Doing well. Doing well. Just like one quick thing, you're going to hear a little click. I have to just turn off all the mics first. Good afternoon. This is Stephen McCarthy, and we are coming to you from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I have the honor of chatting with Braden Holloway, the North Carolina State head coach for swimming and diving. And he has come on the show today just to share with us his experiences as an athlete and as a Division I coach. How are you doing today, Braden?
Good. Thank you, Stephen. Thanks for having me on. Fall is here, and I love the fall season, so it's a good time of year.
Yes, I know that North Carolina, I just had a friend of mine that actually moved down to, he went down because he's working with some NASCAR athletes, and he went down, I forget the name of the actual city in North Carolina. But nonetheless,
Charlotte?
He says it's beautiful. Pardon me?
Was it Charlotte?
Maybe. He said it's right in the location where there's a lot of those, like NASCAR companies and different driving teams. Is that correct?
That's right. They're everywhere down here.
Yeah. He said that was anyways, whole other subject another day. But he has talked very highly of the weather. He said it's much better than Minnesota. And he's looking forward to it in about 2 months, 3 months when it's the middle of January. And he says, I'm going to be still sitting here enjoying the outside. It's kind of funny because as we've interviewed a couple of you, of coaches from the South, I'm always fascinated by the biography pictures that you guys put on your athletic websites. And they're always of you guys swimming outdoors.
And it's like, of course. Yeah, in our indoor pool, I'll even put up a fake sun on the scoreboard,
It is.
That way they're
is,
always outside.
Yes, it is a. It is not a sight that you see very much in Minnesota in the world of Minnesota, in the world of swimming. There actually is a couple outdoor pools, but they have troubles with them because of the hot, cold scenario. But
right.
Nonetheless, that's another subject another day. But first of all, I think you have a very curious background that before we get too much into like actually specific questions about what athletes can do to get better, would you give us your background as an athlete and then as well as a coach?
Sure. Well, I grew up in Louisiana down in Baton Rouge. And growing up, I did pretty much all the sports like most kids do. You know, baseball was big for me. Basketball was big for me. I'm not the biggest guy, so I think my football skills kind of stopped at flag football when I was about 8 or something. But you know, I did swimming as well, and then once I started going, in high school, I gave up baseball and kind of focused more on swimming, and had the privilege of working with some great coaches that are pretty well known and are still in the sport, and also with some great minds as far as helping me out of the water. And you know, it kind of led me to the college selection process, which was a lot easier back when I was doing it than a lot of these kids have now with all the social media and everything. So I'm kind of lucky about that. But eventually, you know, I found myself wanting to go to North Carolina State. I kind of had everything I was looking for and came here and you know, was an athlete here for NC State. And I think probably the best thing about it was I was able to meet my wife who swam here as well. And we now live here and coaching here with the family. After swimming for me stopped in college, you know, I once I graduated, that was it for me. I didn't want to keep going. My body, I think it was about as far as it could go. You know, I got into coaching. I actually helped out till I, you know, graduated. Then my wife and I moved up. We were got engaged and moved up to Chicago. I did kind of a marketing job for a little bit, and then I was hired on as a coach for a local club team up there. So I was in Chicago for about a year and a half. Then, you know, luckily my wife was able to work from home and travel here and there with her job. So it kind of allowed me to do what I wanted to do, which was just to be in the college coaching. So from there, I got a year at the University of the South with Max Overmiller, great guy. Very knowledgeable in the sport. I learned an awful lot from Max. I was only there for a year because I got a great opportunity to go coach with Ned Skinner at Virginia Tech, and I was actually up there for about 8 years. My wife and I started our family in Blacksburg and was able to contribute a good bit to the Virginia Tech program. And then my alma mater came calling a few years ago, and, you know, as we just kind of talked about the weather, Raleigh's a great place to live, and it's where we both, our hearts are. So we, now we're back here at NC State. So that's kind of my journey.
Yes. Once you said Chicago, I was like, holy smokes, a guy from Louisiana is moving to Chicago and he's going to stay there a while.
No way. It was a little different for me. Yeah. I was trying to look for those places to go fishing and there aren't any except for the big lake.
You could so, catch. Yeah, there ain't many cool lakes in Minnesota, or not Minnesota, but Illinois. They're all dirty. I'm like, dude, where do you can't even see the bottom. You know, you're supposed to be able to see clearly through water, you know, not that muddy stuff.
I tried to get in one time, but it was freezing, and I was like, it's July, and it's still too cold. And I think the rough part was trying to figure out, you know, up there when it snows, you know, the snow doesn't go away. It just keeps piling up. So just to get to a front door or get to my car on the street, I had to climb over like a 5-foot snow wall just to get in my car. But it was a good experience. It was good because the summers were a lot of fun. Just, you know, riding bikes around downtown and experiencing what a big city's like. But it was definitely different for me.
Yes. Well, let's just go in because I think you mentioned a couple things that we've talked about on the show in the past, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. One is the role of social media, you know, and I want you to to look at it from two different perspectives. Not only from, you know, it's kind of one of those things that I don't like to admit to, but it probably is here to stay. You know what I mean? And I've tried.
Right.
I have three kids of my own, and to get them just to limit their time is like you thought that you had asked for their firstborn or something like that in 6 years, and they're going to be paying for the rest of their life, so to speak. But
right.
Also on the other aspect, too, of what is the result of doing that? How have athletes changed, you know, as far as how they think, you know, because they're doing so much social media? So can you kind
right.
of look at it from both those sides?
Yeah, I mean, I think in my eyes, social media has both pros and its cons. I think some of the pros, obviously, from a program's perspective is it, you know, it helps get your program out there in a very easy way. And you know kids are looking at it. You know kids are following those things. So it's instant exposure everywhere throughout the entire world. It's not like it's limited geographically or anything. So I think it helps market the sports. I think it helps market what people are doing in their program. And I think it gives, you know, those student athletes that are kind of checking you out, it kind of gives them a little bit of an idea of potentially what you're like and just kind of a little bit of an insight to your program. I think, you know, for them, you know, it's tough because I think it sometimes it has some cons. I think some of the cons are, you know, everything is once it's out there, it's out there. And sometimes, you know, if you're a youth and you slip up and you tweet something that you probably shouldn't tweet, usually somebody finds out about it and you can't really cover it up. I think sometimes, you know, student athletes will chit chat probably a little bit too much on social media and you know, show their hand or whatever to a program, maybe the way they are or you know, and it may hurt them in a negative way. Plus, it seems like nowadays with social media, all, you know, when all these college kids get here to, you know, to school, they know it all, you know, and they become way more opinionated than they used to be. So, you know, I think it has its pros and its cons. And it can hurt. It can hurt someone, obviously, as much as they can. It can help them. And I think as long as they probably watch what they're doing and think beforehand, you know, they could really probably use it to help them down the road. But obviously, sometimes when you're in the heat of the moment, you don't do that. So
it is an interesting discussion because we have had, you know, probably five or six coaches over the last. 2-3 months talk about technology and the role it plays in high-level sport. And it really is a difficult answer. There's no one right way because you can't not use it, you know, if you will, because
right.
then you're not looked at being progressive, you know, if you will. But on the other hand,
right.
you know, I know that I am close to a Division II school here in Minnesota, and I was in a class one time, and they talked about how college students haven't learned the art of conversation and small talk because they just haven't used the skill because they're so busy texting all the time. And it's one of those things where the art of communication seems to get lost, and you talked a little bit about that as well, where they just feel that being opinionated and telling everybody what they're thinking is a conversation. Well, no. That,
right.
That's the starting point, maybe. You know, maybe you get to communicate your feelings,
exactly.
but it is a conversation. And I think it's just an interesting discussion. But now let's go to the other piece, because you talked about the recruiting game as well and how difficult it has gotten over the years. What's changed and why?
I would say it's become more of a straight-up business. You know, I think when back in the early 90s when I was kind of going through this, it was a process. It took time. It seemed like schools were patient, you know, and everybody took whatever trips they wanted to see the schools. And when they were ready, they were ready, and it flowed like that. But I think it's followed the model of college football where it's, you know, you want to have a successful program. And for your job, you know, it's not just about graduating student athletes and kids improving. Which is ultimately the goal that you want, but it is now more about winning and losing. And college sports as a whole is now more about wins and losses. you know, and obviously aside from the graduation rate. So obviously I think college coaches over time have felt that change and that shift as far as what their role is outside of being a mentor for the right reasons for these student athletes. It's hard because it's, you know, it's obviously our passion, it's our livelihood, but it's our job, you know, and this is how we support our families. So I think it's followed the college football mark, and it's gotten aggressive to where colleges are going to go after the best kids, and they're going to try and get them, and then, you know, at the same time, they don't want you to have them. So it kind of sped up over the process so much in the last few years that, you know, with social media and learning more about these kids helps, but also I think it's the aggression of the coaches being even earlier in the scouting process and getting to these high school coaches and club coaches early. And I think it's also the kids. The kids are learning that everything's earlier. You know, I mean, you know, right now you see a bunch of kids have already found their schools, and it's just now beginning of October. We're loosely, in the previous years, it was late October, and, you know, when I was coming out, no one picked a school in October. Everyone picked a school in April. And but I think student-athletes don't want to miss out, so they're kind of trying to beat the other student-athletes to the punch to find that school and find that scholarship, and at the same time, colleges don't want to lose out to another school. So it just seems like it keeps getting earlier and earlier, and, you know, there's more and more kids taking unofficial trips this year and the year before than ever before. So they kind of know what they want. They kind of know, you know, the area or the type of program or the things that they like about different places. So I really feel like it's gotten more focused, just like, you know, just like a pure business is run. So,
well, it's interesting how technology has really changed the way we look at life, you know, in the idea that we're going to move faster because we can make our own decisions, you know, because we're getting educated on our own. You know what I mean? Where in the past,
right,
the coach was the face of the school. He was the
right
person that would sit down and, you know, NC State was the coach. You know what I mean? That's who it was. It
right
wasn't the buildings. It wasn't. But you see so many kids nowadays, and I've seen it in the local team that I work with, that their swimming attracts a very, very highly, I would say educated, that's not the right word, but and I would try to use a fancier word than just smart, but they're very smart kids, okay? And
right,
it's interesting to see how, you know, colleges need to present themselves in a way to give a good face, but you can't go out there and say, oh yeah, you're going to be X number, the number one, you know, on the relay team, you're going to do X, 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 and then what happens if they don't make it?
Right.
And it
right
really,
I mean, it's tough.
Tough.
I mean, we usually talk about, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to get where you're going to be because you're going to do the work. We're just going to provide a path. We're going to provide the guidance and the knowledge to help you, to give you tools for you to do what you want with them. You know, I mean, I tell our team all the time, if I ever want it more than you, then you'll never make it. You won't make anything that you're going for. You got to want it more than anybody. And I think with technology now, the ability to find student athletes is so much easier. The ability to communicate runs at times 10 of what it was. I mean, remember back, you know, like, I mean, just because you asked me earlier about my athletic background, I mean, it would be like a mail. You know, I would come home from school before I go to practice, and it'd be like a letter in the mailbox. And that was the only way. I mean, there was no email. There was no internet. You know, I know it makes us feel old, I guess. But these kids, when, you know, I'm like, you guys realize when I was recruited, no one even heard of the internet. You know, there was no email. It was a phone call and handwritten notes all the time, which are great, but you can be way more aggressive, obviously, and learning the student athlete and showcasing your program with technology.
All right, let's kind of switch gears a little bit because time is just a little bit short. But what trends have you seen recently in the world of training athletes and, you know, training? Because there's always a difference between college level versus the youth level. But
right,
what general changes have you seen that have been made for the better, and what maybe have you seen that has not been the best use of time and effort?
Well, I don't know if I can really say anything that has not made it, that hasn't helped. I think just because our sport is just getting so much better. You know, when the Magic suits came around in 2008, 2009, I mean, everybody was fast, and then they said that we're going to take a step back. But in reality, it just opened up the mind of what a body's capable of doing. So I think our sport, you know, especially swimming, has taken such a gigantic step, not just once or twice, but maybe three or four times, especially if you look at the youth of how fast kids are. I mean, shoot, coming out of high school, these kids are really fast. I think a lot of it has a lot to do with there's more resources that they're using now than what they used before. I think it used to be you come in, you grind, you work hard, and that was it. You know, there was no learning on how to eat, when to eat, what to eat, at what times of the year. There was no thought of a whole lot of visualization and what that can mean as far as your technique is concerned. There were no good toys. I mean, you know, that's one thing a lot of kids look for when they get to college is just different toys to help. And I think it's not so much physically with these toys in the water. It's more of getting the athlete more engaged in what they're doing. And I think that's trickled down to the club level and the high school level. So, excuse me. I think it's a lot more of the youth is now subject and open to how many different avenues there are to get better. And the coaches that are coaching them are using it.
Yeah, so, it's interesting when you – sorry, I'll let you just interrupt or just interject one thing. Yeah. Is that so many coaches have always spoke of, you know, 80% of all sport and success in sport has to do between your ears. You know, it isn't physical. It isn't a talent thing. And we've had numerous authors on the show to talk about this specific thing about the genetic code and the human genome and, you know, can you predict the successful athlete? Can you make a successful athlete by replacing certain, you know, structures within the body? But it still comes down to it. In the end, it is in your mind. And the power that you can create inside of your brain and pass it along to your body.
Right.
And would you agree with that, or is there more to it, or how do you?
I would agree with that once you get down the funnel. You know, okay. And what I mean by a funnel is, you know, at one point, and you know, before these kids get to college or whatever, they're at the top of the funnel with everybody else, and then as they go down the funnel, it gets smaller and smaller, so you lose the bottom half, and then you lose the bottom half, and then you lose the bottom half. But obviously, at the bottom of the funnel, there's the opening. And I think that's where all your elite athletes are. And, you know, if you think about the Olympics and World Championships and NCAAs, everyone there is pretty much talented. I mean, and everyone there pretty much works hard. So it's basically the myth, I think, for those athletes, it is mostly mental. Who prepares himself the best mentally to approach every single day? What's the decision each athlete makes when they wake up and they go to a workout? I think it really exists when you get to the elite level. Obviously, I think when you're not there, you know, I think hard work can take over someone who's talented that's not going to work hard. But at the end of the day, if that talented athlete, they have the genes and they have the size, they have the big hands, big feet, they have the technique – if they decide they want to get on it, I mean, they're probably going to pass that other person up pretty quickly.
Yes. And that's the thing that we always think of. I'm a basketball freak. That's what I was born and raised on. But like the Larry Bird, you know, Pete Maravich, you know, versus Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson. I mean, there's these ultra high talented that did put the time and effort. And then there's the not so high talented that put the work in and they get there too. And, you know, so many things in sport today is now about the numbers. You know what I mean? You're 6'4", you know, 220, you know, 3% body fat, can bench 700 pounds. You know, I mean, these kind of things.
Right.
But how much, where do you think, do you put a percentage like, okay, talent is 20%, you know, the other is 80%. Have you thought about, you know, what that ultimate balances on all these different, you know, sciences and, you know, numbers?
Yeah, I mean, I have. I think it's a lot more talent percentage than people want to say, because they don't ever probably want to get away from the notion of hard work, which to me is a given. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people put so much stock in the numbers because you can't teach it. You know, you can't create a 6'4" sprinter, you know, and his ceiling of improvement is probably going to be better than the guy who's 5'11", just because his arms are going to be 3 inches longer, you know, and that's 3 inches more in the front of your catch, and that's 3 inches more in the back of your finish. That's 6 inches per stroke. You take 9 strokes on the first 25. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, you have more ability to put strength behind that just by the size of the muscle. So I think the numbers, you know, I think coaches in all sports are going to look at that, because you just can't create that. You can mold an athlete, I think, as far as the environment you create. I think you can mold their work ethic. I think you can mold the way they are as how they interact with being a team player and taking one for the team and being self, you know, less instead of selfish, or, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, if that person that has all those tools and numbers isn't going to want it, then they're not going to reach their full potential, obviously. So, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with talent. You know, I think that you just, I don't know, more and more these days you see bigger kids. I mean, guys, some of these high school kids coming out are just, a lot of them are just bigger than they used to be. And,
yes.
You know, and I think because of probably better knowledge of nutrition when they're younger, better knowledge of, you know, nutrition when they're maturing. And, you know, if you do that at the same time as that body's growing, you're going to maximize the potential to be a great athlete as far as the tools and your size are concerned. So, yeah, I definitely think coaches look at that a lot more. And I think the talent percentage is going to be pretty high.
That is, I'm going to have one more question and then I'll let you go for the day, but it really is an interesting discussion because you see so many kids, let's just say, you have your 6'4", you know, long arms, big feet, big head, just like you described. And then you have your 5'11", guy that is going just as fast.
Right.
Maybe faster than that guy that's 6'4" right now as a 16, 17 year old. But the other guy's getting recruited and he is not, or maybe he's being recruited, but maybe not to a Division I level, maybe a Division II level, that type of thing. What kind of information, or what would you say to that athlete that is sitting there looking at it going, well, why aren't I being recruited? I'm better than him.
Right. Well, I think, you know, they got to put in perspective, I think, you know, it's like picking teams for a basketball game. You know, I mean, that taller guy is always going to be the eye candy.
Yep.
You know, I think as far as that, you know, those guys just got to make sure that coach knows their ability, their willingness to work past their disadvantages. You know, I mean, for us, if we do look at smaller type guys, it's more of, I mean, can those guys kick? I mean, do they have a motor that propels them? You know, and all, you know, you see a lot of those guys that have done great in the sport of swimming going through college. And most of those guys that are smaller are the ones that are the best kickers on the team. So I think a lot of it depends on, you know, those kids communicating, having their coaches at home communicate with those colleges. Like, look, I know this guy is smaller, but let me tell you, his catch is great. His kick is great. You know, great. I mean, I think they got to really use that advocate because, you know, not all colleges are going to do that. I mean, a lot of colleges just recruit off times. And they don't want to take that risk on that taller kid, you know, who may have more potential ceiling. But, you know, because, again, if they don't work for it, you know, we're just going to give them the tools. But if they don't work for it, then that's a waste, you know. And they know that smaller guy is the one who works for it. That may be the safer route to go down. And the other thing I'll say for those, you know, those guys and girls that are like that is there is a place for everybody. You know, there's so many great programs out there. Some of the best coaches in the world are probably in Division II, Division III anyway. They just don't know that because they're developing usually a different level of athlete at that time. So I would say, you know, there's you want to go where you're valued. You want to go where you're going to make an impact, because that's going to be your experience. And that's what you keep forever.
It almost comes to mind the movie with Steve Martin. I forget the name of it, where he's the football coach and he goes off to Division One. What is not Father of the Bride? Cheaper by the Dozen, you know, and where he's the head football coach for the big Division One place, but he ends up going back to Division Three and just enjoying it. And there is a tremendous amount of highly talented coaches that just have a different lifestyle. Or a different, you know, they've been born and raised in St. Cloud, Minnesota, and they want to stay there, you know?
Right.
Well, the biggest school in the area is a Division II St. Cloud State University, you know what I mean? And it really is an interesting discussion. Well, anything else you could think of before I let you go?
No, no, I appreciate you having me on, and hopefully if anybody listens that, you know, they can take at least one word that I said that might help them. But I appreciate you having me on your show.
Absolutely. Thanks. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Stephen. Bye-bye.